This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Manitoba, and for all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca, good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Wednesday night. Joining us on the program in about 30 minutes' time, he's the Boston Bruins play-by-play broadcaster on the New England Sports Network. Our good friend Jack Edwards makes his return to the show for the first time this year. Coming up at the top of the next hour from TSN 1260 in Edmonton, our sister station in Edmonton, Dave Jamieson is going to join us to talk about the Oilers. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest NHL and Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Without further ado, I say good evening and, most importantly, happy Hanukkah to Richard and Ezra and Remus and any of our listeners who also might be celebrating the Festival of Lights tonight. Gentlemen, good to see you.
Did they get your holiday card, Drew?
Remus got my holiday card. Remus and Leah got my holiday card.
Remus, come on here for this.
Ezra, I don't know if you've received my holiday card yet.
Yeah, I did get the holiday card.
Okay, so Ezra
appreciate
got the holiday
it. Thank
card
you very
as
much.
Well.
Yeah.
You weren't saying that last night at the game.
Whoa, what was he saying last night at the game about the holiday card?
A few jokes thrown around.
You know what, Ezra? You're making a powerful enemy, not in me, but in Laura. And my wife, Laura, you're making a very powerful enemy.
You should really tread
lightly about that.
Remus, what did your...
We're joking around. It was
what
a good card.
Your significant...
That's, you know what he said yesterday.
That's not what he said yesterday. Remus, what did your girlfriend think of the card?
She thought it was lovely. It's very nice. And I can't believe your wife, Laura, Drew, went to the effort to send all those. That's very nice.
Yeah, she's a very nice person. Far nicer than I am.
Did you sign the card?
No. Of course not.
Drew actually told me that he was against the idea of sending the card.
I was not against the idea of sending the card. My contribution to the card was to gather everybody's mailing addresses.
Is there a picture of you in the card?
No. There's no picture. I was disappointed.
Well, why? Rich didn't get a card?
No, Richard did get a card. He just hasn't checked his mail yet to receive the card.
I haven't checked my mail yet. That's true.
Yeah, but no, everybody got a card. All the Illegal Curve members got a card. I must say, Dave got a card. He sent me a text message of thank you.
Wow.
Remus got a card. Both him and Leah sent me a text message of thank you.
There we go.
Ezra got a card. No text message of thank you.
Wow, Drew's really milking this card. Like, what do you want, a telegram? No, we appreciate it. And Laura, it's mainly all Laura.
Oh,
so I don't know 100%. Why I have to thank you. Next time I see Laura, I'll thank her.
Yes, you should. Let's get started with last night's Winnipeg Jets-Buffalo Sabres game. The Jets obviously 5-1 victors at MTS Center in the first game since losing Jacob Trouba to that upper body injury, which appears now to be a wrist injury as he was spotted wearing a hard brace today. Jets win 5-1. Coming into that game, the Buffalo Sabres had won 4 games in a row, 10 of their previous 13. Based on their play, how in God's name did that team win 10 of their previous 13 games?
Well, you know, Drew, they're not a deep team by any means, especially their back end. Now, Jonas Enroth has been maybe the key to this. Mike Harrington spoke about it on Saturday's show. Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News spoke about the fact that their goaltending has been terrific, and I don't think the goaltending necessarily was at fault last night. The Sabres just didn't have it. They played the night before. They played an overtime game. They flew in at 2:30 in the morning or so is when they arrived. We were talking to a couple of the Buffalo broadcasters, and in between periods said the team looked tired and the Jets were skating really well, and I thought that was absolutely true. So, yeah, I thought the circumstances were in the Jets' favor last night, and you do wonder how Buffalo was able to put that streak together. Maybe it's just a matter of time where they were playing so poorly at the beginning of the year, and then the fact that the Eastern Conference isn't very good. But I thought the Jets took over the game yesterday when they had the opportunity to do so. They took some sloppy penalties in the first period, let Buffalo hang around, and then when they pushed in the second period, Buffalo kind of folded, and you could tell that once the Jets really started skating and using their size a little bit, because the size and speed advantage I thought was certainly with the Jets yesterday, they took the game over. And Buffalo's defense is an Achilles heel, as you're talking about, you know, guys like Tyson Strachan, Andre Benoit, Mezeros. I mean, Mezeros shouldn't be a top six guy in the league anymore. Strachan and Benoit, you could argue, you know, have an AHL pass, and then you have Zadorov and Ristolainen, impressive young players, but both offensively inclined a bit and learning the defensive game, and then Tyler Myers. So the Jets took advantage of that.
Tyler Myers played almost 30 minutes last night, played 29 minutes and 4 seconds for the Sabres.
And, you know, it's so hard to judge a player like that because, sure, he's not the best skater, and sure, his, you know, sometimes it takes him a while to get somewhere. But he's a smart player,
sure,
and, you know, a tad methodical, but I thought with what he's working with right now, he's certainly had a better season than in the past couple.
Ezzy, what were your takeaways from last night's
game? Yeah, Richie, you mentioned, you know, the penalties and that 5-on-3 penalty, power play, I should say.
Yeah.
I thought was a big kill for the Jets, and then Zadorov got the goal there, and really I only thought that was a small blip, really, for the Jets. I thought the Jets were the better team, even despite that, in the first period. And, you know, goal aside, Zadorov was -3, and, you know, the shorthanded goal that Michael Frolik scored. And you got to give credit to Jim Slater, who's obviously had a tough offensive year. But Cody Hodgson makes a terrible play, and Jim Slater steals the puck from Cody Hodgson, and then Cody Hodgson doesn't get back quick enough to cover Michael Frolik. And so, you know, to me, that the game was really over, and then, you know, Scheifele takes over after that. So, you know, the Buffalo Sabres, it wasn't their best night, and it's nice that they've got back into the playoff race. And I asked Ted Nolan about it. He didn't really want to hear any of it, but really they are in the playoff hunt. And, you know, Richie mentions, and we've talked about this for 3 months now, really since the beginning of the season, the Eastern Conference is that bad, and a team like the Boston Bruins, I mean, I expect them to be in the playoffs when April comes around, but they've struggled, and David Krejci, we're going to talk to Jack Edwards about him, they've really struggled without him at out of the lineup.
Apparently might be making his return tonight in Minnesota.
Yep. That's why we got Jack on, and he'll be able to tell us better than anybody. He's the voice of the Bruins, and you know, he's a point-a-game player. We know that up the middle, Richie, when they've got Krejci and Bergeron, that's probably one of the best 1-2 punches, with the exception of a few teams. But the Sabres, you know, Richie mentioned Zadorov and Ristolainen, both first-rounders.
Yep.
But, I mean, you're expecting a lot of a couple 19-year-olds, and I think that the future is bright for those guys, but I think they're playing probably bigger minutes than you'd want.
Absolutely.
Probably out of both of them. Yeah. And you mentioned Tyler Myers, a guy that, you know, has been the subject of trade rumors. He's their best defenseman, clearly. It's not even close. And then you've got, you know, a collection of guys that are filling in, really, and probably not who they want there. Josh Georges didn't play last night, but the Jets played well, and they got in, the power play was good again. You know, I thought it was just awesome for Mark Scheifele, a guy that has struggled all year. He's really turned it on in the last couple of weeks here. You know, the crowd, I should say, was cheering for him to get that hat trick, and he was pretty darn close. But it was a good effort. It's a team that you should beat. And, you know, you could have really seen the Jets fold there, especially with the Jacob Trouba news that you mentioned earlier, Drew. You know, now without three of their top six defensemen, and they got the job done. And it was a big win, and especially, you know, with Boston coming in. Even though they're playing the second game of back-to-back, they lost last night. You got a tough Bruins team coming in on Friday night. So it was a good all-around team effort, and you didn't need the Ladd-Little-Wheeler line getting all the offense.
No, in fact, they didn't get the only one of the Ladd-Little-Wheeler line. The Wheeler had that one assist on the Kane power play goal. Other than that, they were kept off the score sheet. For the Jets, I think they certainly have to be pleased in that they were able to distribute the ice time so evenly. Dustin Byfuglien led all defensemen at 23.5 minutes, which is really a light night for Byfuglien on the back end, and I'm sure that we'll see those numbers skyrocket as they work through their injuries. But I mean, all the other defensemen got to play, you know, in and around, you know, 17, 18, 19 minutes, so that certainly wasn't an especially taxing night for the Jets, and it's not a taxing schedule right now. You know, they played on, you know, they played last night. They have 2 days off, the skills competition today, then Friday, and then Sunday. So every second night or so is not a very difficult schedule right now, right through the end of December.
Yeah, Richie, Drew mentions, you know, Dustin Byfuglien, and he's obviously paired up with Ben Chiarot, which is now probably the most unlikely first D pairing that you could imagine for the Winnipeg Jets right now. But due to all of these injuries, that's the first pairing, and I thought they did an excellent job. I think you'd agree, Richie. Tyler Ennis and Zemgus Girgensons is a good player, but Tyler Ennis is the most dangerous player. Chiarot was matched up against Ennis, and I thought he did a really good job. And sure, yeah, I mean, you do have to factor in the second game of a back-to-back, but I thought that pairing has done a good job now. What is that, their fourth game together now? And you know, they haven't been spectacular, flashy, or anything like that. But Ben Chiarot is making a name for himself here as someone who's reliable for Paul Maurice, and I think that's very impressive.
I'm thinking back to last night's game, and I was in my seats. I wasn't in the press box with you guys, but I can't really remember very many high quality 5-on-5 scoring opportunities that the Sabres had last night.
I mean, a 5-on-5, the game wasn't close.
No.
It was the power plays. And the Sabres had chances on the power plays. They didn't capitalize on them. Got a little fancy Ennis there on the fake shot and slot. But, yeah, Drew, you're absolutely right. At even strength, the game wasn't close.
And I think, you know, again, you don't want to be too hard on the Sabres because, as we mentioned, you know, they've won 10 of 13 games.
Yeah.
Which is
no surprise to anybody.
Yeah, no, not at all.
You're relying so much on so many youngsters. And you have Mikhail Gregorenko, who's come in for kind of spurts over the last 3 years. He was sent back to the AHL today, and I didn't even really notice him on the ice. So the Sabres really are very thin. And, you know, as I mentioned, you look at the top line, and, you know, Cody Hodgson, a guy
I don't think he played another shift after that power play turnover.
I mean, that goal was all his fault, and then he didn't come back full speed on the back check with Michael Frolik.
He played 4 minutes and 55 seconds that entire game yesterday, so I think he was nailed to the bench after that turnover.
He's a guy that they thought was going to be a second-line center. He's got 5 points this year.
You were in the scrum, Ezzie Ted Nolan went off on Cody Hodgson after the game.
Well, the thing with Cody Hodgson is he was traded, obviously, from Vancouver to Buffalo and Cassian, and I think there was another player involved there.
Marc-Andre Gagne? Who is it?
I think it was.
Gagne. Yeah.
I think you're right, Richie. It was Marc-Andre for sure.
Yeah.
but, you know, he's a guy that played for the Manitoba Moose, right? And is a former first-round pick, and he's not getting the job done. I mean, 5 points, that's just unacceptable. And, you know, the way he came back on the back check, are we surprised that Ted Nolan kept him on the bench?
No, absolutely not. And this is a guy who's been a healthy scratch for a number of games recently as well.
Well, it's just a matter of potential, right, guys? I mean, he's not maximum. He's got skill. I mean, is he the biggest guy? No. Is he the toughest guy? No. Is he the fastest guy? No. He's skilled, though. He can see the ice well. He can make plays. He's got to bring the full effort, though. And he doesn't bring effort, and Ted Nolan doesn't like that. And that's not only effort, that's decision-making to me, Ezzie. Because, you know, he loses position on Frolik yesterday, and will he win a race with Frolik or not? I don't know. I think Frolik had that step, and, you know, he's got to get back and close it if he wants to make up for the terrible turnover at the blue line there. But it's the fact that he forces that turnover in the first place. Why are you making that play? And that's Buffalo with a young team. I appreciated that Ted Nolan was calling him out, and Mezeros for a number of plays that he made. I like the fact that Ted Nolan was honest in his post-game presser. There wasn't a bunch of cliches with Ted Nolan there.
The difference is Andre Mezeros, they know, is just a stopgap measure. Cody Hodgson was supposed to be a key member of this team going forward because he was signed to that, you know, what is now a terrible contract, but nobody would have thought he was this bad.
Yeah, and I mean, the contract doesn't look good right now, but that's right now. And, you know, things can change here. And certainly they're not going the right direction for Cody Hodgson right now, but he's also, you know, he's not 32 years old here and, in the second half of his career.
Yeah, but he might be playing himself out of the second NHL city at this point. Vancouver got sick of him and traded him away.
Yeah, he got demanded his way out too, apparently.
Yeah, but that's because, I mean, remember, I forget the Vancouver general manager right now.
Mike Gillis.
I mean, the press conference when he was traded, you know, he came out and said, you know, I was sick and tired of spending all my time dealing with this, you know, this one player.
Oh, I mean, and there's been attitude issues. No question about that. I mean, I think that plays into the effort level here.
But Richard, the point that's important, though, is the one that you just made, though. I mean, a player like him, he can't afford it. It's not just about goals, it's his effort level. And the reason why they were doing so well wasn't necessarily, sure, they were coming back on teams and winning one goal games, and there was some overtime wins in there, but it's just not a team that has a lot of offensive depth. After, as we mentioned, Ennis Gergensen's, I thought Drew Stafford was one of their best players, and he's a guy that might be out the door along with Chris Stewart. They have to win tight games, and they all have to be playing the system, and it's a team that lacks an identity, it lacks depth.
Yeah, they lack everything.
It's impressive that they're still even remotely close. I mean, you look at the teams that are above right now, the Devils and the Flyers. I mean, it's that Eastern Conference is probably the thinnest we've ever seen.
Yeah, it's not even impressive, Ezzie. It speaks to just the lack of, to me, it speaks to the lack of quality. I mean, look at Buffalo. Like, what are they good at?
Well, they don't score, and they give up too many goals, like, aside from that.
They don't have much talent up front. Their back end is a mixed bag. I know George is out and such, but they're a mixed bag of youngsters, guys who are really young and guys who have played large portions of their career in the AHL, goaltenders who've never really been starters before, a head coach hadn't been a head coach for a long time.
there's a huge gap there, Rich, and I'm not talking about the gap between the defense and the forward. I'm talking about you bring in Gionta and Georges, and why did you do that? Partly to get over the floor and add some salary, but you did you bring those guys in to complement the core? Because aside from Tyler Ennis, and then we threw in Cody Hodgson, who's struggling this year, you don't have much of a core.
Yeah, I mean, Ennis is a better player than Hodgson. Ennis can play on my team any day of the week. Good player, but doesn't have much to play with there.
Well, the challenge gets a lot harder for the Winnipeg Jets come Friday as the Boston Bruins come to town for their only visit. Let's head to break, and when we come back on the other side, we'll talk about the Bruins and the Jets. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Jets will start back at a 2-on-1 on their own. Perreault across the line. Perreault for Scheifele, a shot. He scores! Mark Scheifele with his second of the night. Transition game for the Jets. They've scored three times in the period and have a 2-goal lead. It's 3-1 Winnipeg. Oh, yeah.
I think I'm going to start saying, oh, yeah, like that. I think only I'd like to try, but I think Paul's the only guy who can successfully pull that off. That's a call from last night's Jets-Sabres game. That was a hell of a pass by Perreault, by the way, to wait and then slide it through the defenseman's feet there. That was a really nice pass.
Great pass by Perreault, and great play by Frolik on both those two-on-one goals to create the two-on-one on both plays. He was a setup guy on the first one, but he actually created the opportunity in the first place.
Yeah. Anyways, that was a good win for the Jets last night at MTS Center. The action gets a lot more difficult, as I mentioned, when the Boston Bruins come to town on Friday night, a game you can hear on TSN 1290, of course. As we discussed, Bob McKenzie officially tweeting that David Krejci returns to the Bruins lineup tonight as the Bruins are in St. Paul to play against the Minnesota Wild. So they are getting back to health, the Boston Bruins. But this isn't the Boston Bruins team that people have been expected to see. Right now, they're sixth in the Atlantic Division, 15-13-3, which to my mind is one game under 500, 80 goals for, 86 goals against, the worst start in 8 years under Claude Julien, and the offense is struggling as well. Only three times in their last 15 games have they scored more than 2 goals. How important is the return of David Krejci to the lineup? And, do you have any concerns about the Bruins and their long-term viability for the season? Or has it just been a function of Chara being injured and Krejci being injured to explain their slow start?
Well, let's settle down first and foremost, Drew. Let's just focus on what's happening right now. I'm not too concerned about either, but David Krejci is their MVP. I mean, you could sit here and argue that Chara and, I mean, fact of the matter is he's very valuable to the team here, and we saw that when the Bruins won the Cup and he led the entire league in playoff scoring. But they need to get more goals, and is it a function, Richie, of missing Jerome Iginla a little bit? Is it a function of having a defense that has really been in shambles with injuries, and Johnny Boychuk's traded? Zdeno Chara's been back now for 3 games, and Dougie Hamilton's really picked up the slack there, and Adam McQuaid's been out. And I think I counted 10 different defensemen have played for the Boston Bruins now this year. And as I just mentioned, Chara's back, but they have to get more balanced scoring, and it's not even a question of taking some of the heat off of the top line there, because the top line's not scoring enough. But especially Krejci has only played 10 games now, and it's been this last little spurt that's really taken them down the standings. As you mentioned, it's unbelievable that they aren't. You always expect the Boston Bruins to be at the top of the standings.
2-5-3 in their last 10.
Yeah, and they've struggled, and they've struggled to score, and it's a team that expects to be in the playoffs, and quite frankly expects to get a home playoff date in the playoffs. And I don't think that there's anything to be too concerned about, in the sense that they still have a lot of depth. And do they miss some of the players that have left over the years? Of course. But it's still a team that has really three really good scoring lines, and even without Sean Thornton, Richie, a good fourth line. But it's, you got to think they're a little bit concerned here, and they play the Wild tonight, second game of a back-to-back before they come to Winnipeg. But yeah, it's definitely not as dominant of a team, Richie. Chara's older, as I mentioned. Boychuk is no longer there. You take away Adam McQuaid, a guy who's been there now for, I think this is his fifth year, and now you're expecting other guys to step up. It's been tough for them this year, but I definitely don't think by any means this team's going to miss the playoffs this year.
Yeah, well, I agree with that, Izzy, because the East is terrible. I mean, you have to look at Boston as a whole and look at, okay, what are they missing? Well, when Krejci's in the first off, we're judging them on recent play, and how many games have they played as a full you know, a team fairly healthy with key players back. Not many. You look at their roster, you say, okay, well, their defense is starting to shape up a bit. Hamilton, Chara, you know, Krug, Seidenberg. You get those guys in the lineup, you're going to move the puck out of your own zone, you're going to be able to defend a little bit, okay? Up the middle, when you have Soderberg and you have Krejci and you have Bergeron, I mean, you're feeling good up the middle, right? Gregory Campbell, I mean, you feel good. There's not many teams that are going to match you there. The wings are the issue, to me. If you're going to have a problem, you better have the problem on the wing as opposed to center. You have Lucic, you have Marchand. Those are the guys who are leading you in goals here, or Ryan Riley Smith. Okay, so Lucic, Marchand, and Riley Smith, talented players, not your most natural goal scorers. And you look at their point totals, and you know they're just clipping below, you know, around half a point every other game. Not going to be good enough. Mm-hmm. The issue is, guy, you know, if you're going to have guys like that keying the scoring for your team, you have to have depth throughout your roster and scoring on the bottom lines. And you have to be able to replace guys when you lose them. So you have Horton, you replace him with Ginla. You have Ginla, you replace him with nobody. And you have Sagan, and you replace him with Eriksson. And Eriksson has not been what Sagan was then. Jager, what have you replaced him with? So you have scoring on the wings that has not been replaced adequately. You've replaced them with guys who just aren't natural scorers. And the truth is Krejci can score. Bergeron can score as well. You could argue they're both pass-first players more than goal-first players. So the pass-first players need to play with guys who can put the puck in the net. So I think Boston's problem is scoring off of the wings. Louis Eriksson has not done what they expected him to do. And that's been a big problem. Certainly Soderberg has helped up the middle. But the roster flexibility that they had before the guy like Sagan put him in the middle and put him in the wing. Jager being able to play with different players. And I'm going back a couple years here, guys. But Ginla as well, the physicality, the ability to shoot, the ability to be a one-shot scorer. How many guys? I mean, Eriksson's got good wrist shot. He should be more of a one-shot scorer here. But how many goals does he have this year? He's got 5 in 31 games. Not acceptable. We'll ask Jack Edwards about it. So I look at Boston and I see a team that needs to add, frankly, speed and scoring on the wings.
Let's talk about it compared to the Jets tomorrow. So how do you see the Jets deploying their defense against the Boston, pardon me, Friday, against the Boston Bruins forward groups?
And that's a good question because I don't think they were challenged with that against Buffalo. You don't really have too many players on that team that you really need to match up against in terms of shutting them down. So when you're playing, I assume you're probably going to see, if it's Krejci and Lucic, you're probably going to see Buffalo's pair against that line because they're so big down low. And then you'll see whatever the other pairings that you have, and it's a mishmash for sure, against that Bergeron line. So Bergeron and Marchand would be a very, very big concern to me if I'm a Jets fan on Friday night.
Yeah, and then, Richie, then you go down the lines, and, you know, it gets a little bit trickier for the Winnipeg Jets. And, you know, Stewart and Postma now, Trouba's not there, so Postma's moved up, and then Klitsam and Party on the third line there. And then you're going to possibly have that pairing up against the Carl Soderberg line. And as you mentioned, I really like Carl Soderberg. Mm-hmm. A player that we've got to know a lot better over the last couple of years. Started off a lot hotter, but he's not necessarily scoring enough that he can make up for some of the deficiencies that you see throughout the rest of the lineup, especially. So it's going to be a lot tougher test for the Winnipeg Jets Friday night, and I think that's stating the captain obvious here. But I think, again, going back to, I agree with Richie, I think, you know, up the middle, they're still very strong. And I think you look at the wings, and that's where you look at some of the other teams in the Eastern Conference, Tampa Bay, Pittsburgh, who have their own issues, especially with Dupuis mm-hmm. being injured. But it's still a team that I want to see this team healthier. And Chara just came back, and McQuaid is out still. And I still want to see this team healthy. And I think they're going to start going here as we go forward, because it's a team that right now I think they're going to be desperate because they lost last night against the Minnesota Wild, who they're playing tonight.
No, they lost last night against the Nashville Predators.
That's what I meant, yeah. Playing the Minnesota Wild tonight.
So flip it around. In terms of the Jets forward groups, how do you want to deploy it against the Bruins defense there?
You're going to see the little lad Wheeler line get a healthy diet of Zdeno Chara. And it's a Scheifele. I assume probably Seidenberg will draw Scheifele. Now that's what his pairing will draw, Scheifele and Perreault and Frolik, and then they'll take their chances with like Lowry and Krug. I mean, Lowry and Kane are a bigger line. Maybe they want to put Seidenberg against him, but the more dangerous line is the Scheifele line, and Krug still at times can get lost defensively a bit. So yeah, that's what I would guess. I think the biggest challenge for the Jets tomorrow is going to be the fact that last night's game they were in Buffalo's zone for the most part. Buffalo couldn't get the puck out of their own zone and don't have a good enough defense. Against Boston, you're not going to be as in the offensive zone as much, so you're going to be defending more. And when you're defending more, the weaknesses that the Jets have on the back end will likely be more exposed. Sure, so that's what my concern would be.
The Jets could get away with not having a great transition game against Buffalo, which they're not going to be as strong on the transition side with Jacob Trouba out of the lineup, as opposed to against the Buffalo Sabres, where it wasn't as impactful.
And I thought in the first period when the Jets were, I thought they took it to them in the first 10 minutes. You know, Paul Maurice always talks about gap. You know, Paul Maurice talks a lot in cliches, but when he talks about the gap, what he means is forwards and defense and how much space there is. I actually thought there was an adjustment period for that first 10 minutes. Even though the Jets were carrying the play, they were leaving a little bit too much space. And against Buffalo, I don't think it'll hurt you. I do think, and they shorted up later on in the game, but I do think against Boston, it's going to be more of a challenge.
Fortuitous scheduling by the schedule gods that you got to sort of ease your way into this new defensive alignment.
Absolutely.
Against Buffalo, as opposed to against what usually is a juggernaut Boston Bruins team.
Sure, but that's the way it goes, and you get bad injuries, so they certainly could use a break once in a while.
That's right. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll bring in Jack Edwards from the New England Sports Network, the play-by-play voice of the Boston Bruins. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel, and we're pleased to welcome back to NHL Midweek from the New England Sports Network, the play-by-play voice of the Boston Bruins, Jack Edwards. Jack, good afternoon, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good to be with you, boys.
Jack, obviously we got the Bruins coming into Winnipeg on Friday evening. Tonight they're in action in St. Paul, Minnesota against the Wild. The return of David Krejci to the lineup. How key is that return in terms of the Bruins sort of getting back on track and back into the playoff spot that most people are used to seeing them in?
It's huge because when you pull David Krejci out, you basically screw up three lines. Without Krejci, obviously, Milan Lucic becomes less effective. The Bruins never solved the loss of Jarrell McGinley in the offseason, so that line began the season sort of down a peg, at least. And then when Krejci started having his injury problems, Lucic went completely flat. So Claude Julien has probably had more instability in his lines than we've seen since the first season he was with the team in 07-08. And Krejci coming back gives the Bruins stability. You get more players playing in the places where they're supposed to play, which has partially been the result of Zdeno Chara's return. This will be his fourth game back since he had his PCL problem in his left knee. So it's a team that's getting more stable. But the problem for the Bruins is they're on the slippery slope. They're in 10th place in the Eastern Conference. The division is pretty much gone because there's so much of a gap between the Bruins and the first three teams in the Atlantic Division. And by the way, they're 7 points down for fourth place against Toronto. So right now they're kind of in the position of having a fight for that last wild card spot. And if they can get in there, then maybe they can get a little bit more ambitious. But it's going to be an uphill climb for this team, even if they are completely healthy.
Jack, you just mentioned that tonight will be Zdeno Chara's fourth game back, and I guess the question is, how has he looked so far in three games back, and what have you learned about this defense with Chara out and McQuaid out and Johnny Boychuk was traded, and maybe some of the holes that you've noticed on this defense in the absence of some of these key defensemen?
Well, first of all, Chara's looking slow. He's not quick in the pivot. He's not a guy who uses quickness as one of his great attributes. He uses power and the ability to dominate large areas of the ice. And in doing so, he still needs to pivot adequately, and he needs to be relatively agile for a guy who goes 6'9", and he hasn't displayed very much of that yet. That said, last night at Nashville, he was significantly better than in either of his two previous games. So that has to be a hopeful sign for Boston. The defensive core as a whole has been kind of in a chaotic state since the Boychuk trade. You know, Boychuk was an important guy in the room. He is an extraordinarily popular player. And he was also a top four guy no matter how you cut it. He was often paired with Chara. And when the Bruins got nothing immediate in return for him, he stabilized the entire defensive core. It put players in positions where they weren't going to be as successful as the lower-tiered positions that they were in. And it became sort of a perfect storm where one after the other, guys started to get hurt. Torrey Krug had his finger mangled and missed a few games. McQuaid's been out with a freak broken thumb that a shot just happened to hit one of the very few unprotected parts of the glove. And they've really had some issues on D, and it's exposed the inexperience of a lot of the young defensemen, some of whom are going to turn into really good NHL defensemen, but not now, not right now. It's, you know, playing D in the NHL, is there a harder position to play in all of pro sports? Because I don't think there is. It takes so many games to learn the position. You got to do so many different things. And when you have to force guys in there who are all in their first or second years in the league and have them play, you know, let's say first pair of minutes or second pair of minutes when they should be a third pair or a scratch, that's going to expose you. And that's what's happened to the Bruins.
Jack, you look at this team and you see the strength up the middle. You know, obviously there's been some injuries, but talent-wise, there's very few teams that would take their centers over the centers that the Bruins can put out there. You look at the wings, though, and you know, sure, Marchand, Smith, and Lucic are leading the team in goals, but, I mean, eight is the high number there. And you look throughout the roster, the wings aren't as strong as they've been in years past, and certainly not the natural scoring ability of Nathan Horton or Jerome McGinley or Tyler Seguin. Is that a need that the Bruins eventually need to address?
They need to address it immediately. That's something that is... It's making the talk shows in Boston, you know, bring in the listeners and the people who want to give their opinions on what move they should make. The problem the Bruins have is they're hard against the cap. So in order to bring in an impact player, a scorer, they're either going to have to find somebody that a team wants to dump that the Bruins can somehow fit under their cap with maybe some salary help from that other team, or they're going to have to move a big chunk of salary in order to get somebody. And that's a really tough riddle to solve because you don't want to create another hole while you're patching one of them. But lacking that, oh, my God, scorer, you know, that kind of guy who every time he swings his legs over the boards, mm-hmm. the other team goes, oh, my God, you know, we got to do something about this. And the Bruins don't have that. At least nobody has appeared as that this year. Lacking that makes the whole team less threatening because, once again, you know, an opposing coach doesn't mind having his second pair out against right. the top line, or even sometimes his third pair against the top line, because they haven't shown that there is one line or one particular scorer who requires the other team to match up against him so that the Bruins can show off what has been one of their traditional strengths in the last few years, which is tremendous depth.
You know, to that point, Jack, and Louis Erickson, obviously a guy they brought in who they thought would fill that role, and you know, a left-handed shooting guy and plays the off wing. But Louis Erickson's got a really good wrist shot, and certainly had the concussion issues before when he came over. But why is he not? And we asked you about this before, and he really hasn't improved since we spoke to you last season in terms of his overall production. Why hasn't he become that guy that they expected him, or at least hoped he would be?
Maybe they thought he was going to be a different kind of player than the one who has played for them. Louis Erickson is a good player. He has a lot of skill. The system that the Bruins play and the style that they play requires a lot of physical contact and physical commitment and a lot of risk. And we haven't seen a tremendous amount of that from Erickson. You know, the prototypical Bruins forward of the last 40 years has been a guy named Cam Neely. And
right.
Not every player can play like that, but most players, especially wingers, have to play with the attitude of that. Now, whether you do that with guile or speed or what have you, or just the raw physicality of it combined with the great hands that Neely had, it doesn't really matter how you get the job done, but it's an attitude. It's an attitude that when the puck is on your stick or the puck comes into the attacking zone, you're going to be the one that finishes that, and, you know, torpedoes be damned, we're going straight ahead, and Bruins fans have not seen a whole lot of that from Louis Erickson. And it's not to say that he can't be a productive player and a really good player, but he has not displayed that in Boston's system.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. Our guest is Jack Edwards, the play-by-play voice of the Boston Bruins on the New England Sports Network. The Bruins in Winnipeg on Friday night. Pre-game show on Nesson starts at 7:30 Eastern, followed by the game at 8 p.m. Eastern. You can also hear it live on TSN 1290 here in Winnipeg. Jack, wanted to ask you about Dougie Hamilton. We spoke about Louis Erickson, how he might not be developing or probably not turning into the player that the Bruins had hoped when they acquired him. Dougie Hamilton has certainly been on the upward trajectory since being drafted in 2011. You know, third year with the Bruins now. You know, is the sky still the limit with this guy? And has he sort of developed into a even better player filling in for when Zdeno Chara was out of the lineup?
Yeah, and you know, see previous regarding being the hardest position to play in all of sports. Dougie Hamilton's growth has been excellent this year. Something a little bit odd that my broadcast partner Andy Brickley pointed out is that since Chara's return, Hamilton has kind of shrunk a little bit, and maybe that's in subconscious deference to the big man. Maybe it's because he is so conscious of Chara on the ice that he feels he has to be a different kind of player. But if Dougie Hamilton can recapture the guy he was, who was playing huge minutes in the absence of Chara, with the addition of Chara and the increasing good health of Chara, that should give the Bruins a top pair of Chara and Hamilton that can compete with virtually any matchup that any team possibly could throw at them. Because Dougie Hamilton's growth during that long stretch when Chara was out, those 19 games, was really outstanding. He really took a jump forward. And yeah, you know, he had two or three bad games in a row at times, but all young defensemen are going to suffer that. That's part of the deal. You've got to get, you know, Denny Potvin said a couple of years ago, it probably takes 200 games for a young NHL defenseman really to learn the position, to learn the personnel in the league, to learn the system, to understand what you've got to do in certain situations because there are so many different situations. And that's 2.5 seasons of playing every single game. There aren't a lot of 21-year-old defensemen who have that kind of experience, but Dougie Hamilton's getting there in a hurry.
Jack, you know, last segment, before we had you on, we were talking about the Boston Bruins, and before we had you on, of course, and you just always expect the Boston Bruins to be at the top of the Eastern Conference standings, and I'm just thinking to myself, asking you what to ask you next, and is there any way that maybe the way the Boston Bruins have been playing, this adversity is good, and it's going to actually help them as they go into the playoffs, because I don't think anybody in this room certainly doesn't expect them to not make the playoffs.
Well, should they make the playoffs, and it is no sure thing because of their position in the standings, they're going to be dangerous because they've got veteran guys who know how to win. That said, they are not the big, bad Bruins that rolled through the East for the last few years, and part of that is because, realistically, even though Chara is still an elite defenseman when he's fully healthy, you got to consider that a guy 37 years old is somewhat in decline. Now, I'm not saying that he's dropped to the second or third tier. By no means am I saying that. But you know, he's not the Norris Trophy winner that he used to be. They need players to increase their output on every single shift. And Patrice Bergeron carried that team for probably a dozen games in a row when both Krejci and Chara were down, not necessarily in terms of delivering results, which have been very difficult for the Bruins to procure this season, but for having this team continue to play hard for 60 minutes, something they did on their West Coast swing when they lost 3 out of 4. They only really had one bad game where the wheels fell off the wagon at San Jose, but they played Anaheim tough and lost. They played L.A. tough and lost. And they got their doors blown off at San Jose, giving up I think it was 5 unanswered goals or 7 unanswered goals. They lost in a blowout, 7-4 in a game, not as close as the score. And then they went to Glendale and they won against Arizona. But a lot of that is because Patrice Bergeron was the metronome of that team. He was keeping them on the beat, keeping the tempo high, and reminding them they had to play hard every single shift. So, yeah, if they get into the playoffs, they've certainly got the leadership group, and they've got the know-how to win, much as L.A. did when it won its first cup, getting in, what, like the third to last day of the season and then running the table just by grinding teams down. But the Bruins right now, as they were at the beginning of the season, are an incomplete team. This team is at least one significant personnel move away from being able to make a Stanley Cup run. They've got some issues with scoring, and it's my personal opinion that's because they just do not have the talent to compete with two elite lines. And that's a riddle Peter Chiarelli's going to have to solve.
Final question for you, Jack. You look at the roster, and there are some holes. You mentioned there's been some injuries, and sometimes you lean on goaltending to kind of carry you through that. And Tuukka Rask has what, .914 save percentage, which is the lowest of his career. Now it's only been 24 games. How has he been so far this year, and do they need him to be better to give themselves a real chance here?
I think he's been really good, and the numbers clearly show that he's not making as many saves as he did in the past, but... This is one of my favorite themes, actually, so thank you for bringing it up. after about 3 years following Zdeno Chara's retirement somewhere out there in the future, somebody's going to run all the numbers of when he was playing for a team or when he wasn't playing for the team, and there's going to be about a 15-point jump in save percentage for all the goalies who played behind him. The Boston Bruins had one Vezina Trophy winner before Zdeno Chara started playing for them. Now they've got three, Thomas twice and Rask last year. It is taking absolutely nothing away from the guys between the pipes. But when you have the preeminent shutdown defenseman of his age taking away the entire left side of the ice, which is the right wings, where a lot of snipers live there, ask Phil Kessel how enjoyable it's been to play against a Bruins team that didn't have Zdeno Chara in the lineup for once. When you have Chara's presence out there for 24 minutes a night, that changes the equation, and it literally changes the equation on things like save percentage and goals against average. And again, Tuukka's been really good. Not as good as he was in the Vezina year, but a huge factor in that is not having Chara in front of him on a consistent basis.
Jack Edwards is the Boston Bruins play-by-play voice on the New England Sports Network. Jack, we appreciate your time as always, and we look forward to seeing you Friday here in Winnipeg.
I brought my best wool socks, and I look forward to going deaf in that building again, guys. It's always a pleasure to go up there.
Thanks very much, Jack. Look, travel safe.
Okay, thanks.
Let's go to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
I really feel the same way now as I did when I hired him. He's an excellent coach. I was happy with a lot of things. I had no real good reason to do this outside of performance, and that's really the bottom line that we're all judged by, is the performance level of the hockey club and certainly the record. And I would point to those things solely as the reason for this change.
Edmonton Oilers general manager and quasi sort of interim assistant coach Craig McTavish, I'm not sure what his title officially would be, at the press conference announcing that Dallas Eakins has been relieved of his duties as the Oilers head coach. Welcome back to NHL Midweek. This segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. So, Craig McTavish, not 2 weeks earlier, says that no changes are coming, Dallas Eakins is safe, blah, 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 all is hunky-dory, despite the Oilers being one of the most atrocious hockey teams we've ever seen. Apparently something changes in those 2 weeks, and Eakins ends up getting fired on Monday, and now Todd Nelson is the interim head coach for the Oilers, and Craig McTavish is, at least temporarily, behind the bench for that franchise. This move going to make any difference whatsoever?
I don't think so, Drew. I think this team is a mess, and it continues to be a mess, and firing the coach here, I mean, certainly the team wasn't playing, I thought, very hard for him. So, I mean, I can understand it from the perspective, okay, you talk all about systems, you talk about this and that. Effort level needs to be the first and foremost first and foremost, in terms of importance, when you have a young team, you need to have a team with effort level. Is that the coach or is that the players? Coaches usually take the fall for that. I think Dallas Aikens, you know, played a part in this, in his demise as well, in that he came in there with such high expectations of himself and of the team. He came in later on and said he, you know, maybe they should have been curbed his expectations for the squad. Well, you know, it's easier to talk later than talk early, and easier to talk earlier than talk later. And by that I mean he could have just came in there and said, "I'm looking forward to working with this group and see what they have." And he thought they had a great group of talent, which people can't disagree with the talent level there, but there's some similar players, a lack of defense, certainly a lack of goaltending, and you know, I think his attitude didn't help either, frankly.
Well, I heard a pundit say upon his dismissal that, you know, he talked too much when he arrived and he talked too much when he left. Would you agree with that?
You know, I don't think that's an unfair comment. I think he talked more when he arrived is a bigger issue than talked more when he left. The players, like when you watch a team play and they don't stick up for each other and they don't back check, and they don't seem to have any semblance of organization, that's a lot of red flags there. And that doesn't mean the players aren't responsible, but it also means that they're not listening to the coach. And how you apportion that responsibility is a difficult task, especially with general manager hasn't given him a great squad. But as in this day and age, with the way the point system is, it's almost impossible to be as bad record-wise as the Oilers have been.
Yeah, absolutely, and I don't think that any of us expected the Oilers to be as bad as they are at this current stage. And if you kind of read into Dallas Aikens' comments yesterday when he spoke to the media, he obviously was saying that, you know, he had no hard feelings towards Craig McTavish, but he was saying that you got to be patient, mainly to the Edmonton Oilers fans who are really tired of this. I mean, it's been almost a decade now of the Edmonton Oilers rebuilding. The Oilers haven't been anywhere near a Stanley Cup since they went to the finals in 2006 against the Carolina Hurricanes, and we've heard rebuilding,
which was a fluke to begin with.
Mm-hmm. So you have a situation where, you know, the Dallas Aikens, the outgoing coach, is saying patience, patience, patience. Craig McTavish, 2 years into his tenure as general manager, makes kind of a rash decision, as Richie mentioned, 10 days after basically saying that, you know, we talked to Dave Jamieson about it when we were at St. Vitale Center for the Toy Mountain Show, and it was a very bizarre press conference, and then he fires Dallas Aikens. I don't think that was the right move, and obviously Craig McTavish and Kevin Lowe, those are the guys that have to make the decision to fire the coach, but where is this going? I mean, you have Todd Nelson coming in after Craig McTavish takes over, but where's the team going? And, you know, I know we're going to talk a little bit about the Taylor Hall trade rumors and all of that, but it seems very doom and gloom in Edmonton right now, and you knew it was going to be a difficult year, and the acquisitions that Craig McTavish made, we didn't really think they were the right moves to make. So you talk about Benoit Pouliot, who, you know, he's had some issues there, and talk about the defense and all of that. Justin Schultz has really struggled on the defensive side of the game. And where is this going? Because should they make the shakeup now? The season's already lost. I think it's really difficult as an observer of this team. I mean, it's quite obvious to say that this team is a mess. But where's the light at the end of the tunnel for Oilers fans here? I mean, is it Connor McDavid?
Well, I find that, you know, everybody's still preaching patience, patience, patience. You know, Aikens, you know, McTee's he's the man to you know, bring the team back to the promised land. Patience, 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 you know, is nice to say, except for the fact that you have to pay, you know, you have to pay for your season tickets.
Yeah, for 9 years in a row. And Dallas Aikens preaching patience is a complete contradiction to the expectations he brought to the table when he started.
Well, Richie, this goes back to what you were saying, you know, when you were talking about this last show. Is everyone on the same page here as far as where this team is going? And, you know, there's a lot of guys being thrown under the bus. And what does that say to the rest of the team? Not just when you say that about Taylor Hall and Jordan Eberle and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. What does it say to the rest of the guys?
That's right.
It seems like a hopeless team.
And Darren Dreger, I mean, he's an insider, so he's getting a leak from somewhere. Who's leaking the Taylor Hall stuff?
Don't know. Let's go to break. When we come back, Dave Jamieson from TSN 1260 in Edmonton on more on the Oilers. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
I mean, there's blood all over my hands in this, too, as well, because I put the lineup together and the roster, and I'm not here to absolve myself of accountability for the situation that we're in. I'm here to solely blame Dallas for the job that he did, because, in my mind, he did a lot of really good things for our group.
Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290 alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from our sister station, TSN 1260 in Edmonton, Dave Jamieson. And Dave, first question for you. Do you have any blood on your hands?
If I do, I've cleaned it off and I'm absolved of any wrongdoing. Yeah, you know, it's funny. The Oilers, God bless them, have given us a lot of stuff for the, you know, the cork board and the, you know, it's funny. After I'm trying to kind of gather my thoughts after a couple of days of kind of watching all of this unfold and, of course, being part of it in terms of taking calls and texts and opinions from people is that, you know, the blood on the hands comment, the Craig's on it comment from Dallas Eakins. I mean, that stuff lives on, as did Kevin Lowe's comment, you know, who knows more about winning than he does. The Oilers serve this stuff up, right? And they don't need to, but they have, and we will know them. I mean, Craig McTavish at his news conference said, I'm firing Dallas Eakins solely because of the record. I mean, as you heard on the clip that you ran off the top there, you know, that he thinks very highly of him as a person, as a coach, as a whatever. And it is solely the record. And this is the same person not that many days prior had said, don't believe your eyes. This is a better team than you're seeing. So, you know, there's a whole bunch of mixed messages that have been sent there. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, I think we can all agree that the Oilers are a bad hockey team.
You know, Dave, we've obviously had you on a bunch to talk about this team, and we were talking about it before you came on the segment prior here. Did Dallas Eakins put himself in a bad position at the outset when he came to the team, was hired, and kind of set expectations higher than he ought to have?
Yes, he did. And you know, drawing on my previous career in pro football and media relations and PR and stuff, is you're better to under promise and over deliver. Mm-hmm. And you best when you take a job, I mean, you can say the right things and acknowledge the fans and whatever else you may need to touch on, but I would steer well clear of making promises to a parched, I mean, this is a fan base that is thirsty for a win. So you step, you know, behind a microphone and you tell them things that you think they're going to energize them, and then you have to make good on those promises, right? And people will hold you to those words, and people in Edmonton have, and so they should, right? It's a hockey-savvy city, not unlike the one you're in now, and they care. Sometimes they care too much, and when you set yourself up like that, and you know, you do things like, you know, talk about you'll be the fittest team in the league and you ride your mountain bike to the rink and all that stuff, which is all fine. I mean, I wish I could do the same, but at the same point, same time, you're setting yourself up
right
to be, and you'll be held to that level of accountability. But here's the thing with Dallas Eakins. His final news conference, his exit interview, if you will, with the media, I thought he did a very good job. And I'm not at the rink, you know, because of the nature of our show and the time it's on. I don't get a chance to be around Dallas Eakins, but you know, when I saw him doing that news conference and listened to it, and I thought, okay, I get it, why the Oilers might have hired him, because he says the right things and projects the right image and so on, so on, so on. But again, and he gave us a little glimpse into what life might be like with the Oilers, in that he is, you know, when he talked about the dressing room, and although he was quick to defend Taylor Hall and so on and so forth, but you know, clearly he didn't connect, and it's a team that's really deficient in a lot of areas, and you know, I'm sure you guys have discussed it on the air, and there are a lot of holes to fill. I mean this is not a quick fix.
Dave, it seems like the last couple of days the Taylor Hall trade rumors have been coming out pretty much, 200 miles per hour, especially since Drager was talking about it on TSN. I guess, sure. How realistic do you think trading Taylor Hall is at this point in the season or before the trade deadline, and what kind of package would Craig McTavish need back for a player like Taylor Hall, arguably one of the best left wingers in the league?
How about a 1-for-7? I mean, we can start in goal, is where you should with any team, and then work your way out. I mean, this team, you know, there'll be brief periods where you think Victor Foss or Ben Scrivens will be a number one goalie that the Oilers can build around, and they're not. Okay, so let's work our way to the blue line, and then you've got, you know that Darnell Nurse will be great. Or very good, and you know Oscar Klefbom will be good, or very, you know, or great, and you know Martin Rinson may be a very solid NHL defenseman, and you know there is stuff out there, but the here and now is pretty bad, and you know the Oilers' top four on defense should not scare anyone in the NHL right now. You work your way up to forward. The Taylor Hall trade rumors, it's funny, a lot of that seems to be, you know, of course, now that Dallas Aikens is gone, it was, you know, the easy to, that's low-hanging fruit for Oiler fans who are upset. Then you move to, okay, well, who's the star player? And it's clearly Taylor Hall. He is the, you know, beating heart of this franchise. And at the, and he struggled over the last, you know, period of games, surely, but at the end of the day, Taylor Hall, in the 5 years he's been here, has been literally the engine of this team. Now, can he be better? Of course. Can he grow into being a captain here, which he should be if he, in fact, is for the long term? But, you know, they're left with precious few assets, which sounds ridiculous when you given how high they've drafted over the last several years. I mean, they do have Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, who is growing into, I mean, he may be one of the few very good stories of this season, is that he has emerged as a stronger player on the puck. He's a more physical presence. I know that seems strange to say, but he is, you know, I mean, he's filling out his game. He's filling out his body. Jordan Eberle is what he probably will always be, a really talented player who does, you know, great stuff with his hands and will occasionally stun you with his offensive ability, but on many nights goes missing, you know, too frequently. And Nail Yakupov is whatever he's going to be, and nobody quite, I don't really think definitively they know what's happening there. And Justin Schultz has been, he's gone backwards in his development. So, I mean, you've got this franchise that they've got some great young players, the young, talented core, as we keep referring to, but there's not much else.
And David,
and the young, talented core is struggling to find its way, clearly. They've got a lot of jersey fillers. There's a couple of bit parts that are of some use, and they're good NHLers, and Matt Hendricks and Boyd Gordon and a few others, and you know, and that's it.
You look fundamentally though, Dave, and Taylor Hall, you mentioned the kind of been the engine, and I guess and one question we asked in the prior segment was, where does this rumor emanate from? You know, are we talking about a rumor that started from somebody speaking in the organization as a wake-up call? I mean, what's your hunch there? Is it something from maybe speaking to other teams and a possibility of there being discussions? Because if it's coming from the organization, which obviously that we're not necessarily sure about that, but then that just signals more kind of discord, doesn't it?
Well, it does. And there were signs of that. I mean, there were cracks showing over and above the losses. I mean, there were cracks showing in the foundation weeks back, and, you know, when you saw that Taylor Hall had gone to Craig McTavish and said that, hey, we've got the coaches back, it's not him, it's us, and then not many days later, Andrew Ferentz comes out and says, no, it's, you know, these, you know, we have to appreciate what we've got here, and guys need to stop moping around. I mean, there were mixed messages. Mm-hmm. When that stuff starts to find its way into the media, you know, on a level, you've got a problem in that dressing room. The Taylor Hall stuff, and I am not entirely convinced that we have a character issue, or that there is a character issue with Taylor Hall. I think what may be happening, and it's human, is that Taylor Hall, as good as he has been, as great as he might be, is dispirited, is beaten down by the losing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easy for, you know, us in the media and the fans to say, well, he's paid a lot of money, just get over it and deal with it. But at the end of the day, Taylor Hall came off a brilliant junior career. All he has done is lose since he's come to the National Hockey League, and it doesn't look like it's getting better. It's one thing to come into a team that, you know, you draft first, get Taylor Hall, and you know that there are going to be some lean times, but the lean times don't appear to be ending. You know, there is no light at the end of whatever tunnel the Oilers find themselves in right now, and mm-hmm. that's, you know, and maybe that's where Taylor Hall lives.
Dave, we'll try and end this on a positive note for any Oilers fans that might be listening. You know,
okay.
Not a lot of positives out of a game last night in Arizona where they are outshot 27-5 in the second period. But, you know, knowing whatever it is that you know about Todd Nelson, the new interim head coach, you know, why is he the right guy for this job for the next, you know, 40 or 50 games this season? And, you know, can he turn this team around?
Well, There's two ways to answer that. One is, do you want to turn this team around? I mean, you don't want them to get appreciably better so that they play themselves out of whatever may be coming, if it's named Eichel or McDavid or whatever. The other thing is, he does have a pretty decent knowledge of this roster, and in the lockout season, he worked with, you know, many of the young Oilers players, Everly Hall. I mean, there is a sense of familiarity. I mean, and that is not, you know, that in and of itself, I mean, Oiler fans, many of them are saying, at least on my show, and I know the others on the station, is, hey, wait a second, this is another guy we promoted within, he's never been in the NHL, we need someone to come in who's got the rings and the knowledge that goes with that and understands what it takes to win. And so, you know, I think there is much auditioning. Well, they're auditioning Todd Nelson, right? They want to see what they've got there. And they probably, and I don't know enough about how the two guys, you know, Dallas Aikens and Todd Nelson, match up in terms of philosophy. Todd Nelson may be very much different in terms of his approach on and off the ice with the players, and maybe they feel that at this point with this group, Todd Nelson is that breath of fresh air. I don't know what he's going to do to change it, because unless you move some players out of the, you know, that are here now, it's the same group. And there, it's hard work is one thing, but on most nights, they're overmatched.
Dave Jamieson works for our sister station, TSN 1260 Radio in Edmonton. He covers the Oilers. Dave, based on the historical precedent, we'll talk to you again in 2 weeks when somebody else gets fired or they make a trade.
Guys, happy holidays to you.
You too, Dave. All the best. Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Well, I'll tell you, the power of Darren Dreger, because that created a lot of buzz around the league. And in the conversations I had on Tuesday, teams were really wondering about the availability of Taylor Hall and when that could take place. And I can tell you this, most teams believe that that's a transaction that, if it happens, would be in the offseason when the Oilers could get more teams in play. But if it happens before then, I can tell you a couple of teams that would be very interested include the Boston Bruins and the Pittsburgh Penguins, who are both in the market for a top six winger. Now, this would be a gigantic transaction, so perhaps it has to wait till the summer. But keep an eye on those two.
That's Pierre LeBrun of TSN and ESPN.com talking about the possibility of Taylor Hall now being on the trade block.
Come on, I mean, Boston, Pittsburgh, of course they're interested. Everybody would be interested in Taylor Hall if he was on the market. He's not in the market. I think it's a wake-up call or somebody talking up, leaking something to Darren Dreger. But, I mean, first off, there's no trades in the league. Like, how many trades do you see?
None.
None.
Well, we were just saying this off air. No, Remus had a good point. There's been more trades in baseball in this in the winter meetings in the hot stove in baseball than there have been in hockey in the last 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, you're seeing trades like Rene Bork for Brian Allen. You've seen player for player trades. I think it's probably around 10, and those players can have a significant impact.
No.
You know, Rene Bork has done a decent job with Anaheim playing on that top line, but we're not talking about changing the fortunes of a team now. Yeah. We don't know if Taylor Hall is, in fact, being shopped currently. It seems like they might be taking offers, but the reality is...
Essie, why would you do that, though?
there's the reality that there might be a number of Edmonton Oilers on the market. You have to think that Craig McTavish is looking at everything right now.
Well, let me ask you this, Richard. You say, why would you do that? And I agree with your point, because he's the most talented player they have on their team. They got outshot 27-5 by the Arizona Coyotes in the second period last night.
Because they have no defense, and they have bad goaltending. Well, goaltending is not a factor there, but they have bad defense, and they don't have much depth. But, I mean, Taylor Hall, what's he have to do with that?
Well, you're getting outshot 27-5. There's got to be... You don't get outshot 27-5 and tell me that you care, that you're giving 100% in that period.
Okay, so when your roof's leaking in your house, are you going to fix the basement window?
I like the analogy, but you're right. I mean, there is no reason to trade. It's like we asked Mike Harrington on Saturday's show about trading Tyler Myers. He said, why would the Sabres trade Tyler Myers when what all it'll mean is 3 years down the road from now, when they're good again, they'll need a right-handed shooting, stay-at-home, strong defenseman. So it's a fair point, but, okay, let's rephrase that. Then how do you fix the Oilers at this point? If you don't make trades... I mean, I
don't disagree with the fact that you have to make trades. I disagree with who you're thinking of trading there.
Well, who else? So, who would you trade? If you're trying to make a significant impact here, you're trying to alter the face and alter the shape of the franchise.
First off, if you're looking to alter the state of the franchise, I mean, you're not trading Nugent Hopkins, and you're not trading Hall, and you're not trading Draisaitl.
Okay.
So you're looking at trading Yakupov, whose value is low, mm-hmm. or Eberle, really, is the only two guys, Ezzy, that you're looking that you're going to get something back for. If you're trading Jordan Eberle, and I really like Jordan Eberle, but if you're trading Jordan Eberle, you're looking for a top four defenseman, preferably top two, not necessarily readily available. That's the guy you're looking to move. And then you're possibly trading some of your prospects. Again, I know their lower round picks haven't turned out, but you have guys, who are you're pulling up like Clefbaum, your guys, like Darnell Nurse. Sure, you want Nurse to be that guy. But at some point, you have to turn your assets into players who can play now, your future assets. I mean, how much value do these draft picks have for the Oilers? I realize that you always want draft picks, cheap players, and they give you value for your dollar. But at some point, you have to move some of them and turn them into players who can play right now. And it's not going to be this coming one because it might be Eichel or McDavid, but after some point, you have to move some of those maybe to better your team now and hope that you'll be able to improve the team and those picks won't be as good. And it certainly would help if you went out and got a goaltender. Like, I think the first thing they need to do is get a goaltender. If you would have traded for Roberto Luongo, not that he would have went there, but Roberto Luongo, you'd have far less problems than you do right now.
Sure. Well, you see it in Calgary. They got Jonas Hiller in the offseason, and their problems, which, I mean, they're struggling now, but for the first 25 games of the season, they've been very good Western Conference team.
Like, why aren't you calling Anaheim and offering a fair amount for John Gibson? Again, just an idea, like that kind of thing. Why aren't you calling Carolina and trying to get Cam Ward in the offseason to settle down, take on some money? They were trying to get rid of him, apparently, in the offseason to take on some money. I believe he's an Alberta boy. That idea, settle the troops down. Give him confidence. Like, that's what I would do. I would get a goaltender first. Who wouldn't even cost you Jordan Eberle, unless you're talking about Gibson and a guy who's a big-time prospect. That's what I would start with. Then you want to get some guys on the back end. Certainly, they're not easily available via trade. Then you must spend some money in the offseason.
Well, they spent money in the offseason. They spent it incorrectly, though.
Right.
I mean, they signed and Mark Fain to big contracts.
While you're spending money on Benoit Pouliot, to Ezzy's point earlier, and you're bringing in Teddy Purcell, a bunch of guys you already have. You want to change the dynamic of the team. So this isn't a team that can't be fixed. But trading Taylor Hall is not the fix.
Can they be fixed with the current management group in place? Can they be fixed with Craig McTavish and Kevin Lowe still at the hierarchy, at the top of the hierarchy there in Edmonton?
Well, I think the timing as well is difficult in the sense that you're now, the season is over. There's no chance mathematically really even unless you go 45-5 or something like that, that you're going to make the playoffs. So where they're at right now after 30 or so games, it puts you in a predicament as far as what you can do. I agree with you, Richie. I don't think trading your best player, and Taylor Hall is the best player. I mean, it's clear that he's the best player. And yeah, who's next? Okay, yeah, Nugent Hopkins, and then throw in Jordan Eberle. But they have to evaluate what they're going to do for the rest of the season, because it's not making the playoffs. So it's how are you making your team better? Because you're getting a high draft pick. I mean, if even if they played maybe above what their winning percentage is now, maybe they're probably going to get the first pick to, let's say, the fifth pick. It's probably going to be a top five pick.
That's right.
And it's a good draft. Mm-hmm. Even after Connor McDavid and Jack Eichel, it's a deep draft. So you know you're going to get the first top five pick. So you have to decide, well, what players don't factor into the future of this team? Because it's past the point of a shakeup. I mean, if you're going to make a shakeup, you would have done that earlier in the season.
Right.
The shakeup is firing Dallas Eakins. That's the shakeup. So, the Taylor Hall rumors are coming out, and you could get a lot for Taylor Hall. You could probably get another first round pick and a roster player for Taylor Hall. You might be able to get more. He's a top left winger. But that's not going to help you make the playoffs this year. There's no trade for Taylor Hall that's going to make the Oilers a playoff team.
Well,
so in that sense, I do agree with Richie that trading him is not probably your best idea. So what do you do? Do you stand pat? Do you move? We heard rumors that the Blue Jackets might want a guy like David Perron. I imagine a lot of teams that have their eyes on the playoffs would want a guy like David Perron. He's been not bad. He's been one of the better forwards for the Edmonton Oilers, but does he factor in? So you have to start looking at those players. And I've said this time and time again. I mean, if you want a player who symbolizes the Edmonton Oilers right now, look at Nail Yakupov. I mean, he is brutal. And I've watched the Oilers quite a few times this year, not just against the Jets. His effort level, mm-hmm. is minimal.
Mm-hmm.
And forget about the bust and all that. But this is a guy that you drafted first overall.
How much chance do the Oilers give Nail Yakupov to succeed, though? I mean, yes, his effort level is certainly lacking.
I think
and
they've given a lot of time to succeed. I mean, he's...
But not time, but put him into a culture of to succeed.
Well, that's all the players, though, Drew. That's all of them.
Sure.
And that's
so
why
if
Richie...
the other guy's performing, he's not. No, if the other guy's performing, he's not. I mean, what does that speak to? I think to Ezzie's point that he's had an opportunity.
Let me read this quote from Darren Dreger on Taylor Hall again. And we can talk about... You mentioned when we were talking about to Dave Jamieson last segment. It's not one player. This is Darren Dreger on TSN 1050. It's not one player. It's the collection of players that make up a sagging work ethic and a lack of culture. But if you wanted to put a face on it or name to it, that would be Taylor Hall. Taylor Hall, at least again from a culture standpoint, more in the room, not necessarily on the ice, hasn't been what they hoped he would be.
So who's giving that to Darren Dreger? That's my question.
That's my question, too. And we don't know the answer to that. Mm-hmm. But if that's coming out of the Oilers organization, and it obviously is that not just a...
And you know it is, because if it wasn't, they would come out in the press immediately and say...
That's right, and there's been absolute silence there.
Mm-hmm.
Is that not the biggest indictment of the Oilers as an organization, that can come out of the organization right now?
But it goes back to what Rich is saying here. I mean, Taylor Hall's not the problem with the Edmonton Oilers. He's the most tradable guy, and he has the most value, and he's the best player. But, I mean, he's a point-a-game player. I mean, he's not exactly a point-a-game player this year, but he's essentially a point-a-game player. And he is someone to look to as the future core of this team. Now, we're not in the dressing room all the time. All we see is what we see and we hear. But to put everything on Taylor Hall is ludicrous, in my opinion.
I agree with you, but that seems like what's happening coming out of the Oilers organization is that they are making Taylor Hall the scapegoat.
Darren Dreger is reporting what the guy, whoever he's speaking to in the Oilers front office, is telling him. And whoever he's speaking to in the Oilers front office is the problem.
Yeah.
So that's Kevin Lowe or Craig McTavish. The reality is, guys, this team isn't going anywhere. I mean, we've talked a lot about this tonight, and we've talked a lot about it in previous weeks, and other shows on this station have as well, Roundtable, Hustler and Lawless.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a situation, and I feel bad for the city of Edmonton. It's a great city. It has a history of winning 5 Stanley Cups. And you have to wonder, what are fans thinking in Edmonton right now with what's going on? People, players getting thrown under the bus, coaches being fired. How many coaches have they had in the last 6 or 7 years? 5, 6?
I think you coached them on an interim basis for a couple weeks.
It's unbelievable, the situation there. And it's depressing. And you have to think that fans know that there's good times coming with the new arena and another high draft pick. But what about the management structure there? What's the future there? Because you have to think that Daryl Cates is reevaluating who he's put in charge.
The only problem with that, as I agree with you, that he ought to be. The only problem with that is that aside from not making playoff money, tickets still sell. People still go to the games.
Yeah, and it's great. And you know this, Richie, better than anybody. I mean, it's a great hockey market.
That's a problem, I think. People aren't walking away.
Well, that was going to be...
They're selling it secondhand on the sites for nothing, but they're paying for face value originally.
Sure. I was going to ask Dave Jameson this. I didn't get the chance to. You know, at what point does this begin to damage the brand of the Edmonton Oilers? And I know I sound like Darren Revelle when I say things like that.
No, I mean, the Edmonton Oilers are, I mean, they're, it's the city of champions, Edmonton. And yeah, it's been rough.
30 years ago, but yeah.
As we said before, it's just been rough because the first overall draft picks and all of that, that was supposed to lay the foundation for the future.
Sure.
And then they've gone backwards.
I think they're very fortunate that they were not playing at home last night to get outshot 27-5 against the Arizona Coyotes, a team that is also quite atrocious.
Well, let's look at it. You know, the Edmonton Oilers are kind of like the Detroit Lions in football in that they take receiver like Mike Williams, if you're a football fan, Mike Williams, Carlos sure. Rogers. Calvin Johnson. So you get your three receivers. Was it over a four-year span?
Yeah.
I mean, 3 years in a row. I don't remember at this point. But the point is that you're taking similar players, right? Forward, small forward. Or you have Eberle, Zenwell, obviously, then you have Yakupov, smaller forward, Nugent Hopkins, smaller forward. Hall isn't a smaller forward, and Draisaitl now isn't. But you get the point. Forward. Sure, forward's helpful, and then you hear that Ryan Murray was really the pick of the scouting staff. And boy, they've been throwing the scouting staff under the bus, those guys in Edmonton have as well. But the point is, in Detroit, for it to have gotten better, they fired Matt Millen.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you could say, oh, they fired Tambellini. But you have to change the top to fix the bottom. And they're just not doing that. They just keep shuffling the pieces below. And nobody else is accountable for it. You fired Dallas Eakins because, again, I don't think he did that good of a job, but you fired Dallas Eakins because you said you needed to do something. You basically said, McTavish said, I needed to do something. Whatever the heck that means.
Yeah.
There's no vision. Then you bring in Todd Nelson, who you passed him over for originally. Never mind the fact that you hired Ralph Kruger off the staff that was coached. We talked about this last night in the pregame show. That you hired Ralph Kruger off the staff of Tom Rennie. And then you fired Ralph Kruger because Dallas Eakins impressed you. McTavish did this. Fired Ralph Kruger because Dallas Eakins impressed you in his interview to be associate coach. So he sold you. As a salesman, which he is, he sold you on his on the job he could do. Without any NHL track record. And he tried to sell the city on it. The city bought it. But at the end of the day, they weren't buying what he was selling because he wasn't delivering. And you fired Ralph Kruger on Skype. Now, this all happened. I mean, yet the same people are involved. And if it's not them, it's their buddies.
Sure. Well, the common denominator in all of those moves is Craig McTavish and Kevin Lowe.
Mm-hmm.
Until maybe that's where you need to start. Probably that is where you need to start before the Oilers are going to turn things around.
And you have Bob Nicholson there, who's clearly a bright hockey mind and certainly can run an organization. Give him the keys.
Yeah.
Now he's close with Kevin Lowe, all the Hockey Canada ties. But it's time to make a move here, and whether it be Kevin Lowe or the guys below him, whatever it may be, you need new guys in charge in Edmonton. And what you should be doing is cleaning house entirely. That's what I think you should do.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll go south to Calgary, where they've signed their head coach to a new contract extension. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
This segment of NHL Midweek is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. Your comedy home in Winnipeg for over 30 years. Check them out, rumorscomedyclub.com. Still looking for plans for New Year's Eve? You can check them out at Rumors. They got a couple shows going on and a great lineup of comedians coming up in the new year. Deborah DiGiovanni, you got Harlan Williams, you have Dion Cole. That's a concert series event. You have the Duncan Trussell Family Hour, another concert series event. Just a terrific lineup coming to Rumors in 2014 for the next few weeks and again in 2015. RumorsComedyClub.com. From real comedy to fake comedy.
Yeah, well, we wanted to get this in there. I know I heard Huss and Lawless talking some smack, and then Lawless was telling me that, you know, it was all to promote the Ezzies. But yeah, the Ezzies are coming up Monday, December 22nd, and we have a venue finally. It is Highway 75 Blues and Sports Bar, formerly the Pemby. So that's taking place next Monday, as I said, December 22nd, and we're going to get it going at about 7. Come on down. And just for those who don't know, the Ezzies are honoring the year's best tweets, Twitter characters. It's all a bunch of fun. We started it 2 years ago, if you remember, during the lockout. And we just did it at my place, and then last year we did it at the Chill Barn Grill, and this year we're going to do it at the Pemby. Trevor D's letting us do it there, so you know, come on down if you're in the neighborhood. It's going to be fun.
There's no way that somebody just didn't crash their car in the finally hearing about the Ezzies, the Twitter awards.
People get very upset if they don't get an Ezzy.
It's true, and I think Gary, even though he complains that he's not really a proponent of the Ezzies, I gave him one last year.
What was
biggest fan of the Illegal Curve sandwich.
That's a good Ezzy. You know what I always find troubling is, you know, I'll be on Twitter, which in and of itself is probably a problem, and I'll click on somebody's profile, and not ironically, they will list that they are a past winner of an Ezzy.
Well, Ezzy's was trending in Winnipeg last year.
Well, it's year before.
It's an important. I mean, obviously, it's all about fun, but it's kind of celebrating, you know, the best of Twitter and all of these great people, you know, that fans of the station, fans of Illegal Curve, you know, that are on Twitter. So we have fun with it, and people look forward to it.
There's probably an argument to be made that the best of Twitter in and of itself is a bit of an oxymoron.
Yeah, that's true. Anyways, especially with me on there tweeting all the time.
Update from the Jets skills competition. Paul Postma won the fastest skater award. Apparently Mark Scheifele tripped in the course of his race around the ice.
Didn't Scheifele win it last year?
Scheifele won it last year, yeah. Yes. Paul Postma is the winner this year.
I think Kane's the best skater on the team, though.
I would agree with you there, but in any event, you can take as much, you could put as much stock into the skills competition as you'd like. Paul Postma is the 2014 winner of the Fastest Skater Award for the Winnipeg Jets.
Donald Brashear used to win the Fastest Skater all the time. No joke. Serious. A lot of those tough guys win some of those competitions.
I would win that too, skating away as fast as humanly possible from one of those tough guys. In Calgary, they have re-signed head coach Bob Hartley to a multi-year contract extension. No terms released, so we're not sure about the number of years, just that know that it's a multi-year contract extension. Not sure of any of the finances involved either, but this is certainly a just reward for a guy who's been doing a great job.
Isn't it, though? You know, you have a guy like Bob Hartley comes into Colorado, obviously wins a cup there on the Tangate goal, as he doesn't want to talk about it on glove side on Berdur, Game 7. I actually watched it at Ezzy's house. I watched that game at Ezzy's house, in fact.
Did you just quietly slink out of the basement at that point in time?
You know what, though, Richie? That was all about Ray Bourque, though. I mean, as a Devils fan, I hated that, but that was Ray Bourque's year.
It was.
Yeah.
And so you have him, you know, the height of the Avs there, and then he goes over to Atlanta and, you know, gets a reputation in Colorado, and especially Atlanta, of being a veteran, a guy who can only coach veterans and gives young players a hard time. So he gets let go in Atlanta, even though he took him to the playoffs, the only team to have done that, the only coach to have done that thus far in the organization's history. They got swept, mind you, but they still made the playoffs. And he gets let go, and you think, okay, you know, you hear, who knows if he ever gets a job again. Goes over to Switzerland, gets hired by his friend, I believe he's a godfather of Jay Feaster's child, comes back to Calgary, and on a team that people didn't have very high expectations for, and frankly, the expectations coaching-wise weren't that good. And look what he's done. You know, kind of recreated himself as a coach of not only young players but veterans, able to get defenders to really play at the top of the top level. To have his team play hard, young guys buy in, trust them, play in a hockey market in Calgary, earn the trust of the new management, Brian Burke, who's, you know, he likes to play a certain style. Brad Treliving, who's really a, you know, bright up and coming general manager. Just a credit to Bob Hart, this is a nice story. Give him props for this one.
It's amazing, as, you know, I'll let you chime in here in a second. It's amazing sort of what expectations and lowered expectations can do, because, you know, we're praising Bob Hartley, and rightfully so, because he's done a very nice job with the Calgary Flames. You know what his record is in the last 3 years? 71, 79, and 13. So he's done a very good job with a team that
It's all relative, though, Drew.
Of course it's all relative. That's what I'm saying. You have low expectations, and he's exceeded them because he hasn't been arrogant about it. He hasn't come in and said, we're going to turn this thing around and we're going to make the playoffs and I'm God's gift to coaching and everything else, and, you know, we're going to turn this organization around in a second.
Because he preaches hard work, right? And you look at this team this year. Now, expectations, last year's team exceeded them, even though they weren't that good if you look at the record. But this year's team, you would have thought, okay, last year, bit of a boost, they're going to drop back. Hasn't happened.
That means people, and that means the players in the room are listening to him. That's what it means to me.
They've fallen out of the playoff spot now, but they're certainly right in it. There's no reason why they can't turn things around. They've lost their last six games.
They have, but I mean, they've been in a lot of those games too, though. People don't realize. I mean, there's a couple of those games that could have gone either way.
Yeah, one goal games that, you know, sometimes you usually hope to steal a point out of and stay in a playoff spot.
Yeah, Drew, as you mentioned, they've lost six in a row here, but they're tied with the LA Kings right now. Certainly none of us expected after 32 games for the LA Kings and the Calgary Flames to be tied, and at one point I think the Flames were even second, as high as second about a month ago in the Western Conference. It's incredible. And, you know, Richie's brought this up before, you know, Bob Hartley hired by Jay Feaster, who's obviously no longer with the Calgary Flames, but it's nice that now with the Brian Burke, Brad Treliving era, they've signed him, because all that was the question mark, I guess, with Bob Hartley getting the contract extension. Well, he's not really Brian Burke's guy.
That's right.
He's not Brad Treliving's guy. Is he going to be signed? But to me, guys, this is the coach of the year. If you're handing out the coach of the year right now, and I don't care that the Flames are in ninth as opposed to where they were before, the job that he's done has been incredible. Needless to say, he's been a top coach for what he's done. And with, you know, guys like Johnny Gaudreau coming in and Josh Juris and getting the most out of those guys. And the thing that I like the most is they play a very, if you watch the Calgary Flames, they play a very exciting style of hockey.
They do.
It's very offensive. It's high octane offensive type of hockey. And they work hard, as Richie mentioned. And, you know, the future is very bright for that team. And you look at what the Calgary Flames have done, as opposed to, you know, the Oilers talking last segment, you know, expectations all and all of that. The Calgary Flames, you can see where they're going. You can see
that's
where
exactly
they're going.
Right.
They signed TJ Brody, Richie, and he's a good defenseman. Matches up well with Giordano. And, you know, they might move some players throughout the year, especially if they fall out of a playoff spot. But you've got Sean Monahan up the middle there. Johnny Gaudreau, I don't think I expected him to be this good, even though he was a great college player.
He's a real deal, that kid.
He almost looks like Patrick Kane 2.0.
He's a real deal. And so, I mean, Sam Bennett?
Sam Bennett hasn't played, but he's going to be a good one. So you see where the team is going,
right,
and you see what Bob Hartley wants to get out of these guys.
Yeah.
So it I think all of us were talking about this earlier in the season. Bob Hartley should have been signed to a contract extension, and the Flames did it because they've seen how he has this team moving in the right direction.
Solid goaltending in Jonas Hiller, two very good defensemen in Brody and Giordano, and all the young offensive talent up front. Things are looking upwards in Calgary, and Bob Hartley rewarded as such. Let's head to break. When we come back, one final segment, NHL news and notes from around the league.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment this Wednesday evening. It's brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, an essential part of your protective equipment is a proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center at 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. I actually think that read should win an Ezzy. Don't be an Ezzy should win an Ezzy.
By the way, breaking news before we get to NHL news and notes. Apparently, the 2015 Shark Girls calendar is out.
Wow. All
right. Well, it's been a nice run.
Might as well update you just for, you know, so you can say that you were notified accordingly. Don't have any idea what the issue is, but Mark Stewart not participating in the Jets skills competition this evening.
I wouldn't read too much into that.
Not sure if there even is an issue or if it's just a night off for the
The shot blocking competition's tomorrow, right?
Him and Trouba would win that, and Trouba's injured, so they're 1-2 and leading the team. I wouldn't. We'll find out more. They didn't practice today, Drew.
That's right.
But I wouldn't get too excited.
And
I wouldn't. I guess with all the defensemen that have been going down, I guess maybe
Remus is next man up.
Yeah,
that's going to be. That's a really frightening proposition. In the Jets defense. So hopefully it's nothing serious for Mark Stewart.
And he's pretty tough.
Yeah, just a day off for the Jets defenseman. Looking around the NHL at some odds and ends, some news and notes, rumors that, or there's discussions have begun between the Los Angeles Kings and Justin Williams on a contract extension. Justin Williams is going to be an unrestricted free agent on July 1st, currently on a 4-year, $14.6 million deal. average annual value of $3.65 million.
Talk about value.
Talk about value. Justin Williams, sure, a fantastic value for the Los Angeles Kings. This might be a bit of an interesting negotiation, though. The Kings currently have 14 players under their contract for next year, for a total of $60 million on the salary cap already, leaving only $13 million for the rest of their roster. And Kyle Clifford, Tanner Pearson, and Tyler Toffoli are all restricted free agents this coming summer. You know, what is Justin Williams worth on the open market?
I think that requires context, Drew. In a short-term deal, he's going to get a lot of money. If he's looking for a long-term deal, he won't get as much. And that's not that's a pretty obvious statement, but the idea is if somebody can offer him a three-year deal, they'll play him 3 years, you know, at $5 million a year, I bet. If it's a five-year deal, then you're looking at more like four to four and a half, I'd say, only because of his age and this type of game that he plays. But it only takes one team, and the way that he plays along the boards, especially effective along the boards, he's been a great player in the playoffs. He's won, what, three cups now, two in L.A., one in Carolina. He can play on your second line. He can play on your first line if you need. He can play on your third line. It's probably worth more than that even. Like in the free agency, he'd probably get maybe even up to five and a half a year, kind of a three-year deal. It's even, you know, $16 or $17 million because of what else he can bring to the table. Now, in a long-term deal, it's a little bit different, but you see what Andrew Ferentz can get on the market, and his equivalent at forward. He's way better than that. So you wonder, you know, he settled there in L.A. Can they sign him, though? And then you look at it, okay, well, if they're not going to sign him, I mean, if they're going to sign him, who are they going to have to trade? Well, they just signed Martinez to his $4 million per year cap hit. They just signed Muzzin to his $4 million cap hit. Doughty's a bargain at $7 million cap hit. Voinov, who knows with that? Matt Green's at 2.5 for the next 3 years, and unless it's Mike Richards, there's nobody else that you're going to be moving. And can you move Mike Richards without taking money back? So, and they didn't buy him out, so it's going to be a difficult one. And if you're not going to part with him as he before the playoffs, just because of how effective he is, you'll just take your chances. I think and with Toffoli and with Pearson, I mean, you're not going to get these guys to take deals like Boston got Krug and Riley Smith to take. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you, Rich, because you're in a situation, and it looks like it's possible Slava Voyanov is in bigger trouble than we originally thought he was.
Yeah.
And, you know, Drew, I think you make some good points there about Tanner Pearson and Tyler Toffoli. I think players that I really like, and how could you not like them with what they did in the playoffs last year? Justin Williams, everybody knows he won the Conn Smythe Trophy last year, and Richie mentioned earlier in his career with Carolina he was having injury problems. The last 3 years, he actually hasn't missed a game. He hasn't missed a game this year either. He's a durable guy who's become durable, but, you know, back to Richie's point, though, he earlier in his career, and because of the style he plays, at 33 years old, you have to talk about, okay, is he going to be signed to a three-year deal, four-year deal, five-year deal? How much? I agree, though. I don't see him going anywhere because of how valuable he is to this team. And it is a deep team. In L.A., it seems, you know, everybody's talking about, you know, how they're struggling. This is a team that doesn't ever really dominate in the Western Conference during the regular season. We know when they wake up, it's playoff time. And I don't really have any concerns if they finish 6th, 7th, or 8th, really. And I don't think they do either. I don't think Daryl Sutter has any concerns. It's just the type of team they are. But you have to look at maybe they're thinking that they'd like to get him maybe to a 2 or 3 year deal, but
you're in the division, you're playing through the same teams anyway. It's just a matter of one home game, and you're not traveling much if it's Anaheim and San Jose like last year.
Sure. You're probably right, though, Richie, on the topic of what to do with some of those other players, Jeff Carter, Mike Richards. I'm not saying they're going to move them, but it affects the salary cap situation with them being on long-term deals. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see who gets signed and to how many years, because as you mentioned, Drew, it's not just Williams. It's Toffoli, Pearson, and some of the other core guys.
So trivia quickly as we're going to end the show. Who is he traded for from Philly to Carolina?
Come on, Rimas. Yoni Pitkinen?
Nope. Danny Markov.
Ah, that's a good one.
Remember that?
Yeah. Well, obviously not. You remembered it more than the rest of us. Another quick update from the Jets skills competition. Andrew Ladd wins the accuracy shooting. He goes 4 for 4. Anthony Peluso goes 4 for 5. So a good effort by Anthony.
That was in the
Peluso
punching competition, right?
Yeah, no, that was that's right. The punching competition. That's it for this Wednesday at NHL Midweek. Big thank you to our guest, Jack Edwards of the Boston Bruins. and Dave Jamieson from TSN 1260 in Edmonton. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, and Bernstein's Deli. Follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. Our website is IllegalCurve.com. For Michael Remus and Richard Pollock, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Thanks for listening. This has been the final NHL Midweek for 2014. We return Wednesday, January the 7th with the next edition of NHL Midweek. We'll still be with you Saturday for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.